There is, that's the time when neglect is a real problem for kids who are just dealing with much, too much turmoil. But the abuse factor increases as the child gets older. The biggest point that I want to make that I haven't really heard today so far is that, as I see it, the trust fund checkoff is for babies. The babies of teen moms are one population group who has no advocate in our society structure, because the moms are not adults. The moms don't have even voting power for the most part, nor often the skills just to do what parenting needs to have happen. So the babies are left just basically waiting to see what kind of skills is the mom going to be able to put together, and what kind of support is the mom going to have to see that the baby's needs are met. And I would invite you to think about the 15-year-old in your family, or the 15-year-old that lives down the street. How many of these kids do you know who are making all of their own medical appointments and making medical appointments for children who can be sensitive to when their baby has a ear infection, get on the phone, get to the doctor's office, know which doctor to go to, get there, get the prescription, get to the drugstore, fill the prescription, get home, and then give the prescription every 6 hours for 10 days. And, you know, that's a challenge for any parent. And how many 15-year-olds do you know who are in this space where that's where they're going to be wanting to put their priorities every 6 hours? So I'd really like to urge that, as I see it, the trust fund checkoff is about being an advocate for babies who don't have one the way things are set up now. What we do is try to be that advocate, and to work with the moms, of course, and the dads when they're available, and the families. We do outreach, which is a big piece of what we do, because for the most part, teens don't come to us saying, hey, I think I would like some help today. I'm thinking of being a little overwhelming. So we go out to them. In Multnomah County, in Portland, that looks like going down to Union and Burnside and knocking on the doors of kids who are living in real tough situations in the fringe areas where there's lots of drugs and crime, and getting them involved in our program. In Lane County, it means we've got volunteers and staff going into hospitals and interviewing every teen mom that delivers in those hospitals. And so we're catching up with them right away, and then following them home after we see them in the hospital, and encouraging them to use us and to let us into their life and help them where they need assistance. In Douglas County, it means we're using volunteers to drive maybe 35 miles into the rural areas of Douglas County to an isolated mom who may be living there in a dysfunctional family that's been almost seems to have purposefully removed itself from the mainstream so it could stay crazy, and bringing this mom into a support group setting where she can begin to identify how she wants to parent, what kind of resources she needs to use, where she wants to go with her life, and make different choices so she can be a happier, healthier person, and have a child that has a chance for a happy life also. In three of the counties, we run support groups which serve a very similar function to what Patty Lane was talking about, providing cutting down on the social isolation of kids, building self-esteem and parenting skills, promoting goals, really trying to work at every aspect in the teen mom's life, that it all comes down to reducing stress and the risk of abuse. We also monitor babies and be sure that the diaper rash is progressing well and not getting worse and worse, and that things are happening where the baby's needs are concerned. As you can see in Douglas County, there's a high percentage in our group of babies who've had troubles. The third piece of our program is to do case management. We're there for kids when they get kicked out, when they their partner beats them up, when they run out of food, all the kinds of crises that are everyday occurrences for kids who are having to piece it together in a real tough way. The outcome have been real encouraging, I think, although we haven't run in any fancy evaluation studies. this year's design is probably the most sophisticated we have, but it's not ready yet since it's just mid-year. I can tell you that of the half of the kids that started pregnant in Douglas County, they started the program when they were pregnant. Those kids are reporting much more successful deliveries. They're getting prenatal care. They're perceiving their labors and their deliveries as not as painful. And they're going into their parenting experience with a much more joyful experience than the kids who were not in the program when they delivered their babies. And that off the bat has some real significance for the maternal infant attachment at the beginning of the baby's life. I can also say that so far this year in Douglas County, 60% of the kids have made positive education gains. I mean, they're either in school or they have graduated, which is very significant for the kids' potential of getting a job later. Anecdotes are another way of telling this story. And just real quickly, I can tell you of one mom who's come to group and said that her baby's life was saved because when her car rolled, her baby was in a car seat, that the program said, you must have a baby in a car seat, and here's a car seat. And the girl came to group and said, if it weren't for group, my baby might have been dead. So, that's a pretty graphic one. Another one about a mom, it's not so graphic, but it's fairly typical in that this is a mom who was sexually abused by her minister father for 8 years, finally ran away from home to California, came back to Douglas County pregnant, and entered group with an extremely low self-esteem, feeling that she just couldn't do anything right. And over the course of the year in the group, she has just blossomed. She has begins to perceive herself as somebody who can make choices about the parenting style, who can take tips that she gets in group, go home, try them out with her daughter, come back to group and say, hey, it worked, or I tried it and this didn't work right, what shall I try next? And she's begun to see herself as a leader. She's now modeling for other moms and is in school, community college, getting her GED, and has plans to go to college, realistic plans to go to college in the fall. I think overall what we have tried to give our kids is a sense of reparenting, a sense of nurturing that is so essential for them to get now while they're having to do those things for their babies. To do this, it's been really tough to find the resources to put these programs together in the counties. This year, about in my three counties that I have funds for, I have no less than 20 different funding sources. Most of them come from foundations, and a big concern to me is that the foundations are very interested in seed money projects, and we're getting beyond that stage now. And so they're pulling off, and I'm trying to have to talk them into leaving their policy of seed money and making a long-term commitment. Otherwise, there is, again, nobody who has taken on the needs of teen moms and babies and their families as their cause. So I'm going running off to mental health. I'm going to health department, to the education people, trying to get a piece here and there and there. And so as I see the Children's Trust Fund as one solid piece that's identified as potentially available to services for teen moms, and one stable piece of funding, which looks really good to me, even if it isn't all the money in the world we need, it's a really solid piece to help draw in the others. And like I said, in Lane and Douglas County, if we didn't have that, we wouldn't have our programs.
Thank you, Ann.
And I think Mary wants to share a few words, too.
Mary?
Hi, my name is Mary Conley, and this is my son, Chaz. We are currently living in the Brethren housing at a church. We have no financial funds. Me and my fiancé just broke up, and it's not going so good. But in this situation with me and my fiancé, it was a mental abuse, and I am trying to stay away from him. And my son, when it was going on, was really upset through the whole thing. And the teen parent program has always been there for me. They came and visited me in the hospital when I had him. They told me to call him if I needed any help. They've taken me to the doctors for him to get his shots and his vitamins for the pharmacy. And they've taken me to WIC. They've helped out with laundry money for him to have his diapers cleaned. They've really been supportive, and they've been there to talk, too. And if it wasn't for them, right now, I don't know what I would do. They are a real good, supportive group, and they use college students through the U of O, and they're really supportive also. I don't know what else to say. They're just a really good group, and a lot of moms like me that don't have a lot of money or things like that, then, you know, they're there.
Thank you, Mary. Questions for either of them?
One.
Representative Bagram?
6 months. Five.
Four.
Good, healthy boy.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Okay. Ann Letton?
I knew it. You are not supposed to follow babies or puppies. I'll ask Lou Hollingsworth his name.
Sure, please.
Great. To sit with me.
Again, I will be brief. My name is Ann Letton. I'm director of the Foster Grandparent Program in Jackson County. Lou Hollingsworth is one of our foster grandmothers. I'm the other half of CSP and would like to add perhaps another piece to what Patty Lane talked about earlier with the teen parent program we've developed. I speak to you not only as a professional who sees the results of child abuse in the community, but also as a parent, as the mother of two small kids. I can think of no larger priority in my own life than to prevent child abuse from happening. I think this touches the heart of everyone here today. I'd like to just add a few points to add to really what everyone else has said here today, and that is to talk about the effects that this one particular program has had on the Jackson County community. I think the effect that I'll talk about here is really mirrored in the other communities that are sponsoring programs out of the Oregon Children's Trust Fund. The child abuse is a national problem, but it's a problem that whose solution lies on an individual level. One has to solve it in the communities in order to change the problem nationally. The Oregon Children's Trust Fund really encourages communities like Jackson County to solve that problem through creative networking between the different social service agencies. Our program is a wonderful network between the Jackson County Health Department and the Foster Grandparent Program, which is a national program sponsored locally in Jackson County. The other program in Jackson County is, again, a very creative network between the Crisis Intervention Services, a large social service agency, and the school system. Again, a creative networking of community resources and also the funding. The funding is limited. We all go after the same pie, so it's best to put our heads together to solve the problem rather than go on it one by one. Tina has spoken about the benefits to her that the program provides. I'd like Lou to talk a little bit, too, from a grandparent standpoint, but I'd also like to point out and have you all consider the effects that a program like this has on the economy of the communities of Oregon as well as Oregon as a state. The potential cost savings associated with producing healthier babies and healthier teen parents, I think, has got to be brought out here. Definitely is a part of our program. The program is young and we don't have a lot of statistics, but we do have babies that have been born already and mothers that have successfully delivered, and the babies are being born brighter, I think, and healthier than they would otherwise have been if they had not been a part of this program. Another cost-benefit factor of our program, or ancillary benefit, I guess, is the the fact that our program is attracting local and national attention. The program like this has never been done before on a national level. As a result of that, the foster grandparent program was able to garner an additional $10,000 this past year, mainly because of our pioneering effort in the child abuse prevention area. The grandparent program works on a budget of about $250,000 a year. 90% of that are federal funds, and these funds come into the Jackson County community and stay there by way of going out in benefits to the grandparents who work in the different programs that we sponsor.
Lou?
Well, I think you've heard.
Would you please introduce yourself?
I beg your pardon.
That's okay.
Not used to this sort of thing. Lucille Hollingsworth. Everyone calls me Grandma Holly. You've heard enough of the that I can't add to for this CSP program, which, of course, I'm involved in that too, but I've been a foster grandparent for the past 10 years. And I have spent I'm in my third year now, dealing with these children that come from juvenile department or picked up off the streets, the kind you've been talking about that are addicted, or been abused mentally, physically, sexually. Some of them have been out of the street for weeks. Thank you. So I know what they're all talking about and about these children and how they're treated. Once they have been to court and have been assigned a caseworker and a counselor, they are designated for various places, either in a foster home or things have been arranged through the court to go to treatment centers, or they come to the shelter home, which is also an evaluation center. It's small. We can only handle about 12, possibly 14 with a tight squeeze, but these kind of kids need space. Pardon my expression, but that's the way they talk, and it's true. They do need it. They've either been boxed in with their emotional problems, the physical side of it, the home life that is lacking, or the abuse that is in the home in one form or another. And we get the results, and they're teenagers, and they start anywhere from, I was going to say, we're supposed to not even take them at 11, but there's no other place to put these young ones. And they are with us from age 11 to 17. And I have found it very rewarding working with these children. It's true. Nature is funny, and you can't win them all. But we sure as the dickens try, and those children can respond. There is some good in them if they're only given a chance. I just hope we don't get at them too late, because they're our next generation, these teenagers.
Thank you.
I think that's about all.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for coming. I'd like to move into work session on this bill, and the chair will entertain a motion. Since there is no revenue impact on this, what I do is the chair will entertain a motion to send the bill directly to the floor.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Van Loon.
There is... some...
That would be a ways and means thing, not revenue, however.
Oh, okay.
And there is no subsequent referral to ways and means on the bill. And there is no subsequent referral to revenue either.
Shouldn't there be?
No, the revenue.
I've talked with the chair of the Revenue Committee. He is of, and I'm going to be asking him to carry the bill on the floor since he's one of the chief sponsors. So if he has some quarrel with it, he can, you know.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ford.
We did get a fiscal impact.
Yeah, $25,000.
For the first year.
Biennium.
For the first biennium.
Why isn't there, Gordon, why isn't there subsequent referral ways and means on this? Yeah.
No, we didn't make one. The
As all of you folks know, the Speaker's office makes these referrals. I did get a call from the Speaker's office saying that this committee should check into whether they thought this bill should go to revenue. They did not mention any impact on whether it should go to Ways and Means because of the fiscal impact. My assumption, and I want to stress that this is only an assumption, is that relatively minor impact to the general fund would be absorbed into the existing Department of Revenue budget. And I want to stress that that's only an assumption.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Ford?
No, I'm told.
Golden, excuse me.
Thinking it. She said it.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be Ways and Means. It would be Revenue Committee. And I would like to see the bill move just as you would, but I'm thinking that we better get some advice before we move it to the floor. And you have other bills to consider today?
Mm-hmm. Well, then the Chair will entertain a motion to send it down the revenue then.
No, I was thinking maybe we could just delay action, and I'd be willing to be an emissary if you
would.
Well,
Representative Gold, I have talked to the chairman of the Revenue Committee. He indicated he didn't care whether it came down there or not. If it goes down to revenue, he's going to be moving it out directly, is my understanding. And, you know, his indication was that...
If I can just say any further... and mind you, I'm signed on to the bill. I want the bill and all that, but I don't like scenes on the floor. And there are other bills that of similar nature in terms of whether they're a tiny drain on funds or a large drain on funds.
Representative Ford,
Gold.
I would recommend that you make a motion to send it to the Revenue Committee.
I don't want to make that motion. I want the opportunity. I want time of whatever it is. Anyone can make whatever motion they want, but I guess I was begging time for whatever the remainder of your agenda is today, and I can go and check it out.
Okay. I think I understand what you're saying. Let's take about a five-minute break. We have two other bills that we have testimony that the chair's intent to, to get out today.
Well, some of us have commitments. However, we'll work as hard as we can.
Before we take our five-minute break, I would like to remind committee members that even though it's been the chair's intent to get out at 3:30, it will not be possible to do that every day, and that I would ask that you not schedule appointments, assuming that we will, because it just will not be possible with the workload that this committee has. Representative, we're taking 5 minutes. 2503. We'll move on to House Bill 2332, and we only have one witness, Gail Ackley. Gail, you want to come on up, Gail? Sure.
Bill number again, Mr. Chairman?
2332.
Thank you.
Welcome, Gail.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Gail Arkley. I'm manager of the Resource and Regulatory Services Section for Children's Services Division. And I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2332. Last summer, when plans for reducing the population of the training schools led us to ask a number of questions of the Attorney General's office regarding placement of youth in community services. Among these, we questioned the authority that we had, Children's Services Division, to place kids who were age 18 and over into private child-caring agencies. Should be noted that the definition of a private child-caring agency includes the definition of a child as an unmarried person under the age of 18. It has been informally the practice of Children's Services Division to allow such placements on an exception basis, individually, if a youth treatment plan warrants the placement. Sometimes a youth who is 17 may need to continue in a private child caring agency until the program is completed. With the remand law, it's also conceivable that we could get a youth committed to the care and custody of Children's Services Division who is aged 18 and would need placement services in the community. Currently, there are 35 youth aged 18 and over in 18 child caring agencies in Oregon. But unfortunately, the Children's Services Division found that the Attorney General told us that we have very little flexibility in legislation for the continued treatment of kids past the age of 18, even though these youth may be committed to our care and custody until they reach the age of 21. Children's Services Division has found that we really don't have the legal authority to support our current practice of allowing older youth to remain in placement past the age of 18 if necessary.
Okay, questions? The witness?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Agron?
Sounds like a good bill to me. I happen to participate in a review conducted in our local CSD office. There's a little citizens committee that reviews, okay. And the manager invited me to sit and listen one day, and I did. And I was struck by one thing, and that was that there were some cases of young people who were about to become emancipated. And I thought how ridiculous it was. These are people who've been, you know, under the agency for years and all kinds of problems, trouble kids. And suddenly a magic date rolls around and lo and behold, they're emancipated. They're out on the street is what it is. And I thought that that was a terrible shame and that there should be some kind of a continuing process in terms of those who really do need it, that there's nothing magic about a birth date that says suddenly you are an adult. Do I understand correctly that this bill would help to fill that gap in certain cases? Is that, or am I on the wrong point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Agrins, I think that you are correct. It is our practice within Children's Services Division for kids who do need to continue beyond the 18th birthday, if they are in a placement and are making progress and are receiving services, we would not automatically eliminate those services at age 18. They're generally working towards emancipation with a plan.
Okay, but I excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I got the impression at 18 and you're out. Pretty much was the way it was.
Mr. Chair, Representative Agrins, it is on an exception basis that children would remain in our care past the age of 18.
And this bill would legalize that nefarious
this bill,
practice?
Yes, would legalize that practice.
Good bill.
Okay. We asked the Legislative Fiscal Office to review this because there was a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and when they reviewed it, there is no financial impact, according to Legislative Fiscal Office, because all this does is codify a practice that they're already participating in. So when we move into work session on this in a few minutes, I need to have you think of that, keep that in mind. Any other questions?
Mr.
Dennis,
Chair.
Did you want to make a presentation? Representative Van Loon?
Well, just will this become a more common practice? And if it does become a more common practice, it would certainly have an impact on Ways and Means, I would think.
Mr. Chair, Representative Van Leeuwen, we don't intend for this to change current practice. We just intend to legalize what we are already doing and what we did honestly think we had the authority to do.
And then another question that relates to this. on the question of emancipation, what happens to the monies for those who are younger than 18 who go through the process, and do they still get the support funds that they might have been getting otherwise, or do they become eligible for support funds that they didn't have prior to that? I know of several, a 16-year-old or two and some 17-year-olds who have are supposedly out on their own.
This bill addresses solely those youth who are in placements in residential or day treatment services. Okay. It does not address any of the issues regarding emancipation or services for children who are not in such placements.
I'm aware of that, but I just ask you that question.
I wouldn't think that it would make have any impact on the services to other youth that are eligible for those services.
Not this particular bill.
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. Right, Dennis Morrow, I'm the Executive Director of Janus Youth Programs, and I'll be very brief here today. I'm here to represent myself and I think the general provider community in supporting CSD and their efforts to get this law in sync with current practice. I think you probably have a rare opportunity to pass a law which is good for the state, which is good for kids, which costs no money, and which really